The Nutty Bites podcast is geek approved by the Geek Out with Mainframe podcast. Cause it's just that darn awesome.
Hello, Mixed Nutcases. This is Nuke Joust, and today we're going to be talking about how your heroes are trash, aka problematic heroes. With me, as always.
Hi. Sorry, it's still tech. Sorry. It was very Canadian today. Sorry.
And our regular co-hosts from the South.
Hey, it's Jen.
And I'm Jason, along with a furry friend.
And we also have our good friend from the West.
The OG.
The OG.
Hello. It is I, Sonnerus Vox, the man of 1,000 promises delivering on none.
He's not the man of 1,000 voices. He's not the man of 100 voices. He's only got one, and gosh, is it a good one.
That's a pretty good one.
It's Sonnerus Vox.
So we're talking about how your heroes are trash because, and I'm just going to start this with some preface. I've been wanting to talk about this for a while because there's like this trope of this all around good guy that everybody's supposed to care about. The Scott Pilgrim, the Ted Mosby, the Ross Geller, and they are all garbage. So I wanted to talk a bit about characters like that. I did not want to talk about the Dexters and the Sopranos and characters that you know are bad people, but you root for them anyway. That's a whole other conversation. I want to talk about these people that we're supposed to be sympathetic with. We're supposed to think that they're great and they're trash. Or in the Scott Pilgrim case, he was originally written where we're supposed to think he's trash. And yet the fandom has raised him to be an every person.
Listen, Scott Pilgrim is a gaslighting, manipulating, arsehole pedophile, and no one should idolize him ever.
As Hugh says, Scott is dating a high schooler at the start of the book.
Listen,
yes.
Listen, the hero of that movie should have been the drummer of Sex the Bomb.
I love her.
Where's Sex the Bomb?
Also, I'm sorry, Sex the Bomb, probably the greatest fictional band name of all time.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, he is absolute garbage, and it's not even like, oh, but the story makes him better. No, he's garbage throughout the entire thing. And honestly, Ramona's not that great either. Yes, Kim Pine forever. That is Hugh in the chat. Hugh likes comics, by the way. So, he also likes books, and he likes games. You should check him out.
And Buffalo, and the way they go.
So, I'll admit, like, I'm completely ignorant when it comes to Scott Pilgrim in general. I've seen maybe one clip from the entire movie. I haven't read the comics. I'm ignorant to a degree. I know what the general gist of it is, but I think the fact that you talk about the story showing no change and no evolution is a common trope among these types of heroes we're going to be talking about. It's they're already built up to be so good they don't need to evolve. And that lack of awareness and evolution is what makes them trash in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the only evolution we see is the evolution of our realization that they are trash. Or some people's realization.
A lot of these male power fantasy characters are generally trash. There's tons and tons and tons of them in anime. I mean, the Mac Daddy of them all, Goku, is garbage. He's a bad father and a bad husband. But yet people love him because he's super strong and he can turn his hair blonde. Now it can go silver.
Yay.
Well, you know, you talk about OG, and let's talk about another OG one here. Anakin Skywalker. We're supposed to believe that over the course of the 9 movies, Anakin has this big redemption arc. And that he's a good guy who was turned bad, who then, you know, becomes good again at the end of episode 6 when he kills the Emperor. Spoilers for a, you know, 30-year-old movie. But can one good deed overcome the fact that he murdiddly ordered all of those Padawans and most of the Jedi Orders?
And Alderaan? Everyone on Alderaan?
But he didn't do that. That was actually Grand Moff Tarkin activating the Death Star laser.
Under whose orders?
Right. And once he was done torturing the princess, no, he went against Vader's orders. Yeah, Dantooine is far too remote to make an effective destination, to make an effective demonstration. And then he blows up Alderaan anyways. Grand Moff Tarkin wasn't supposed to do that.
Oh, by the way, right. That's as villains go, that's a baller move. that far off planet? No, that's not going to make a big enough splash. That one will, though. Hey, princess, kablooey!
By that point, I mean, we already know Darth Vader's the bad guy, right? Anakin Skywalker, though, yeah.
Well,
since we're talking about Star Wars, is it Anakin's fault that he's the bad guy? Because I distinctly remember an entire council of...
Bye. Golly G. Willikers.
There we go.
Like, he's going to balance the force.
That's not a good enough substitution word.
Yeah.
Donkey.
Yeah, no. That's already been... No, no. It's deemed inappropriate. I have to edit that.
Really?
Strike one for you. Yes, always. Always been the case.
Donkey butt.
But yeah, I mean, you bring up a good point. He may not be the villain. I mean, he's certainly villainous. The things he does are, a lot of them are his own decisions. But the council, this venerated council of people that are supposed to be the hero, they're supposed to be there for balance and for good and everything. I've long said, like, if you look at the world that in the prequels, the world they were in. The Jedi Council also provides over what is almost a utopia. Everybody's provided for to a large degree in the interior. The Outer Rim, of course, is a little different, but as it always is in these things, you need to establish a lawless area. But things are good. They're prosperous. They have a multi-system Senate that meets and discusses and gets things done generally. It's a period where good is definitely winning. And then they're like, yes, we need to bring balance to things. Well, that means you need to unleash evil. So, yep. Duh. They're either dumb or they know they have to unleash evil, so they're not the heroes.
The thing is like, he unleashes evil, and then he is a horrible, horrible bad guy who does horrible things. Mm-hmm. You know, all right, Padawans, line up and close your eyes, and I'll give you a special surprise. Oh, Master Annie, can my surprise be a hug? No, no, it's a lightsaber to the head.
When you're quoting Robot Chicken.
Yes. So he gets a lightsaber. They all get lightsabers to the head. Then he wanders around the galaxy murdering Jedi. And that was probably the best part of that opening trilogy, was that montage of just Jedi murders.
Like, although...
And then at the end of episode 6, it's like, I need to see my son. It's like, oh, he's a good guy again. Oh, look, once they, you know, he killed the Emperor, took the suit off, he's human again. Hooray! I did read an article about how somebody was really pissed off at the racism in Star Wars because inside the galaxy's most powerful black man is a dying, pasty old white guy.
I was going to ask. I was going to ask.
Rant. Yeah. Oh, that's what it was.
I was going to ask, would we look at George Lucas differently if in the special edition when he takes that helmet off, it's just James Earl Jones with his hair from The Warriors? And you did it.
I want to back up Vox here on the Jedi Council, because either, like, number one, this tells me that people in power always think that they're not on the winning side, number one. And two, even before that whole we need to bring balance thing, like, they're not good people. They don't care about ethics. It's all about order and right and wrong. So it's like, so because your methods are less ruthless, does that mean they're better? Like, oh, no, you can't actually have feelings for another person. What is wrong with you? You're trying to raise sociopaths and then surprise somebody might turn to the dark side.
Dude, let's be real, right? They have order and a republic, but there's still slavery in this universe. Like,
yeah,
like, and they kidnap children. The Jedi are not good. Like,
and they don't care about slavery. They are complicit in it. Qui-Gon buys Anakin
and leaves his mother to die a slave.
Yeah, yeah.
A random person another guy had to buy her off of her slaver to free her.
And then marry her.
And then they both died.
Which is, you know, that's a whole other bag of questionable ethics there. It's like, I'm going to buy yours for your freedom. Now let's get married.
So you're on the top, I have another one for questionable ethics. Mm-hmm. Kevin Costner in Waterworld.
Oh, yeah. So I've never seen this, but Tech was telling me about this the other day.
Okay. He sells a child into sexual slavery and then only decides to do the right thing after the fact, after the deal is done, only because the child starts making noise and it bothers him.
He also exposes himself to that child, too, in that. He pees on an orange. So he has the only orange plant left.
Tomato
plant, yes. And to hydrate it, he pees on it in front of a child and her mother.
I'm not sure that's a great way of raising tomatoes, but
I think Kevin Costner's character in Waterworld falls a little bit more on the Dexter side of things, because he's very much a reluctant, he becomes a swashbuckling hero towards the end. So there is that kind of arc there, and he's supposed to be a hero, but
he sold a child into sexual slavery alongside her mother.
And this is the thing, is there's an ounce of a redemption arc in there. It still remains one of my favorite movies for just the sheer lunacy of it. But
he also forces them to cut their hair.
There is a word that I realized yesterday, or realized just today, doesn't get used enough, that applies very well to his character. Mm. He's a misanthrope.
Mm. Yeah.
He is classically a misanthrope. He's the guy that doesn't want anything to do with people. He's just ornery. He wants to the minimum human interaction.
By the way,
look, those are Tech's life goals.
Yeah. So obviously,
get off of my property.
So flood the planet, get some gills, and you'll be happy.
Yeah. All right, so I got one of those down. Let's go for number two.
I mean, he plays generally the same character in The Postman.
So. You've never seen
Water without the gills.
Yeah.
No, I never saw Waterworld.
So then I feel like we now have a podcast that we have to do. We have to either live commentate or just watch and review Waterworld with Netflix.
Because the one redeeming factor that movie has is I love the actual villains of the piece. Are
Isn't
fantastic.
It Dennis Hopper?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Dennis Hopper plays such a good villain.
The smokers are such a great entity. It's we've got oil, we've got tobacco, we're gonna be everything that big oil and big tobacco are in human form.
I think my favorite of them all is the dude in the tank.
Yes, and and folks, if you've not seen Westworld, all of this is set in Mad Max universe, but on the high seas.
You mean Waterworld, yeah. I started off with Scott Pilgrim, but I wanted to get more into the we can all agree that Ross Geller is gross.
Yeah.
And never redeems himself and just becomes more and more selfish and does not care about anyone else's feelings.
Yeah. There was when Ross Geller's name first got brought up in our chat there, I linked a video that plays it up perfectly. If you take away the laugh track and any of the music around it and just have Ross Geller interact with somebody, just take it at face value, the way that David Schwimmer portrays the character. The nasal whininess, the insistence on his way, the passive-aggressive...
sandwich! Yeah,
the passive-aggressive building of fury, because he always builds towards... He simmers and simmers and simmers, and then becomes furious at people. And it is very disturbing. It's he's not a... Like, out of everybody in a cast of... Everybody's flawed in that show. Because it wouldn't be a good, compelling show if everybody wasn't flawed in some way. But they've all got quirky minor flaws. Like, you know, Phoebe's a bit of a ditz. Joey is, well... Joey's questionable, too, because he's basically, like, the creep on every woman type of guy that probably doesn't know the definition of consent too well.
But the thing that... But the way he's portrayed is very much like the male counterpart to Phoebe.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is he's what was the old term, the mimbo?
Yeah.
Right. But I mean, Monica's obsessive. Rachel wants material gain and all of that more than anything. Everybody's got their flaws.
Yeah. Like,
but Ross is just a straight up bad human being.
Ross is the epitome of the nice guy trope. And it was like this whole thing, like, if you're just a nice guy, like, then women should go out with you and they're so cruel for not. And it's like, no, number one, did you ever ask her? or let her know that you care. And number two, women are not vending machines that you like do nice things to eventually give you sex. Like that does not work.
Right? Like he's an incel, right? Like by those standards, he's an incel, right?
Well, yeah, I was going to say he should be the poster boy for modern incels.
There's definitely a Venn diagram where a lot of that overlaps. Absolutely. And I just think that it's, in the 90s, like everybody was supposed to be identifying with and rooting for Ross. And in the 2000s, everybody's supposed to be rooting for and identifying with Ted Mosby because he's just looking to settle down and find the mother of his children. No, he's trash because all he wants to do is sleep around and pretend he's nice.
Ted Mosby?
Yes, Ted Mosby from How I Met Your Mother.
Oh,
the main character.
I mean, that's that entire show is full of problematic people. That right, show you is
have
trash.
You have to mention Barney.
Barney, but I think we're supposed to know that Barney is a gross human being.
But he's lovable and fun, and Neil Patrick Harris plays the heck out of that character and makes it so much fun that we're supposed to be okay with the fact that this guy is, well, for on multiple occasions, just an out-and-out rapist.
Yeah, yeah. And they do give him a bit of a redemption arc, but I really, spoiler alert for How I Met Your Mother and how it ended, I really hate how they made him having a child punishment because now he has to watch her. Like, you only then care about human beings because you have a daughter. I hate that. By the way, it's really hard for me not to swear right now.
So you guys are forgetting the granddaddy of them all, Mr. Home Improvement himself. Tim Allen, the literal oozing, dripping, toxic masculinity ball of the 90s and early aughts. Like, just
everybody's dad?
Yeah, but was his character a bad guy or just Tim Allen?
Yeah.
His character was always the kind of, if you're not my type of macho, you're less than me.
Yeah.
He was definitely in the same bracket when it comes to females as Al Bundy. Just unlovable. Like Al Bundy was lovable and charismatic because Ed O'Neill's amazing, Tim Allen's
get out of my brain because I was about to say that like Tim Allen's character in that show is basically a slightly less trashy Al Bundy.
Yeah, just not as likable.
Like it's like the evolution of character from Archie Bunker to Al Bundy to Taylor.
I think also, and I'm going to say that I think part of that is the time. And that's what sitcoms were like. There's the dad and there's the mom and the traditional roles and blah, blah, blah. And we just didn't have the nuance.
I think we didn't have the actor behind it. Because I see what you guys are getting at. Like with Carol O'Connor and with Ed O'Neill, the idea of those two characters is that they were horrible people on the outside. And at the heart was a nugget of like a caring, compassionate person who really did care for his family. And
Tim Allen.
No.
Archie Bunker.
Archie Bunker. That's it. Thank you. Archie, you know, yeah, he made fun of his son-in-law.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, he loved the guy.
And
he loves his family and he loves his daughter and he'll do anything to protect them. But Tim Allen didn't have wasn't that good of an actor. And probably let down in the writing that it was nothing but a bunch of like little one note jokes and one tone characters. And we never got to explore that depth. It's like he always treats his
Al, the assistant,
like crap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With no redemption, you know,
but that character was the one that was endearing and kind and fatherly and sweet.
And this is where the toxic masculinity aspect comes, because the one guy who's a very positive bastion of masculinity, like Al, the big, tough, bearded, or the big bearded, like tough guy on the outside,
who actually knows how to fix things.
Yeah. Has the sensitive core as well. Right. He's a well-rounded human being. He's treated like the whipping boy of the entire show.
Yeah.
And Tim, the Tool Man Taylor is the worst, the worst at it.
So there are a couple of things. So with Archie Bunker, he is a racist and he is not a great person, but that was intended. And it was supposed to show, like, the whole intention of the show was to show that even though you're grumpy, personal relationships can change your core values. You know, when Sherman Helmsley moves next door, Archie's having a huge problem with it, but then they become friends and it becomes a thing. And we never had anything like that happen in Home Improvement. Now, I could be wrong, but I have like this weird memory that originally it was supposed to be a tool show. And that was the original pitch. And they said, no, this would be great if we turned it into a sitcom. But it just honestly, like, did anyone ever care about any of the characters?
So, well, remember, JTT was involved.
Yes, yes. I mean, where he came from.
I was going to say that, like, as a character too, and it's key for a lot of the people we'll probably be discussing is the change needs to be internal.
Yeah.
If like someone who is an actual proper hero looks inwards, they have some form of epiphany, they learn and they evolve as a character. Yeah. If it weren't for Wilson, Tim Taylor, the character, would never be any better than he was at the start of the show. Because
why can't he learn any lessons by having a conversation with his wife? He has to go talk to the neighbor, and then the neighbor convinces him to be a decent person.
I mean, he has to go talk to the fence, essentially, because
Wilson shows up and just, in like three lines, completely reeducates him. And then he's like, oh, well, I guess I got to go apologize to the wife again.
Yeah.
Here's a comparison that I just had. Make the assistant and Tim teenagers. Make Wilson a principal named Feeney. And you've got Boy Meets World. And it's a better show, has better character growth. And everyone needs a Feeney.
Okay, two things about that show. One, Topanga. Two, do you remember that time the car from Knight Rider was a high school principal?
And if you didn't cry at his retirement,
oh my god,
then you aren't human. Now, I just wanted to share in the chat. Spence says I cared about JTT and the brothers, and T for Goblin says that Wilson was probably the best character on the show, and I'm going to agree with that. Now, Tech, you had somebody from probably that same block of television, that era.
Did I?
Wanted to talk
yes.
Oh,
let's talk about my man Urkel.
Heidi ho, neighborino.
Neighborinos. So for the time, it was a really funny joke about the little nerd next door who could not get enough about the daughter, and he was just the annoying typical nerd character who just wouldn't leave her alone.
Like, I love how science had to make him a actual good human being.
Right, make him into Stefan Urkel.
It didn't make him a good human being. It did the ugly duckling thing. He was still the same person.
No,
Stefan Urkel is completely different.
He actually starts behaving different, and he's super suave.
He behaves differently because he's suave and he has confidence, but it's all superficial. It's no longer the squeaky accent, no longer the glasses and the weird posture and the weird clothes.
Oh my!
But he's still same. He's still Steve Urkel.
It's like what's that movie? Is it Never Been Kissed? Where they take her out of the overalls and they take the glasses off and
he's all that, or the Not Another Teen Movie,
not the paint covered overalls.
That's exactly what it is.
But I mean Urkel defines unwanted sexual advances.
Yeah, yeah. And he doesn't take a hint.
It's again and again and again and again, and the only thing you get from him is, I'm wearing you down!
And the worst thing is that eventually
it works!
Yeah, because it's cute when he's nine.
And the worst part is, the one that treats her with respect and gives her agency and consent, Stefan Urkel, she chooses the sexual predator over Stefan.
I mean, it's still the same person. Like, and it would say a lot about her if she decided, well, now that you're suave and smooth and you talk with a different voice and the nasal is gone and everything, I'm cool with you. It would be a very, bad look for her. If she,
Laura,
right?
Is that her name?
Yeah.
Laura.
Yeah. I'm sorry. All I can think about of that show is that Al definitely, had a different life after Nakatomi Plaza.
You know, the PTSD from that night runs deep through him.
Yeah.
Obviously has affected a lot of the things in his family, even after, after season one, when his youngest daughter disappeared and they never look for her.
Nope.
Yeah.
T for Goblin says, let's be honest, her character had as much depth as paper.
Well, that's correct.
Yeah.
Fair.
There's a, everybody was one note. It's just that the character, the thing is that Urkel was a phenomenon.
I don't think they expected Urkel to be the main focus.
No, he wasn't. He was supposed to be. He wasn't supposed to be the focus of the show at all. He was just the Kimmy Gibbler.
Even originally, the neighbor. He was just a kid at school, and then they made him the neighbor.
You're right. He's the Kimmy Gibbler. He's the six. He's even Homer Simpson. Homer was not supposed to be the core concentration of the Simpsons. It was supposed to be Bart. Yeah.
He was the Screech.
The Screech.
Oh my God!
Speaking of which, there's an entire YouTube series around this. Zach Morris is trash.
Oh my God!
Everyone in Saved by the Bell is trash.
Yes, but he stands out as the most emotionally manipulative person on a show full of narcissists. So.
Well, think about it. They're all stereotypes of the worst kind, right?
Yeah.
Zach is the manipulator, the gaslighter. Slater is literally oozing toxic masculinity, and we have another Urkel in the form of Screech, we're just not going to talk about Screech, right? RIP.
I don't know. There's a lot of
actors
in that show I just don't want to talk about.
Yeah.
Sitting here thinking about it.
Maybe if you're working as a child and not having a normal childhood, it might do some weird things to you. I don't know.
I
don't know. Child actors can turn out perfectly fine. Ask Macaulay Culkin. Oh, wait. Oh.
Wait, what now? Hold on. Hold on, though, Fred Savage. But listen. To give Macaulay some credit, there was some time in there where we were like, now he's kind of okay. A little weird, but he's okay.
Hey,
Underground is
maybe,
all right.
Maybe it's just the guys that this affects. Why don't we ask some girl child actors and see how they turned out? Britney Spears, Lindsay Lohan,
Lark Voorhees, Sabrina, whatever her name is.
Who's the one that started this? The sex cult?
Oh God,
that was Alex Mack.
Not Allison Mack.
You take that word out of your mouth, sir.
I believe she's mostly free of scandal.
Larissa Olenek and I are the same age or thereabouts. I've had a crush on her since she started on TV.
Yeah,
and you shut your mouth, sir.
And you know, Spence, it's really good that you mention Mary-Kate and Ashley, because Steve, would you like to share with everybody why Tanner is the worst?
Okay, so I was joking about this, but the theory has grown on me. Danny Tanner is the epitome of a character that could be seen as much darker than they are, or much worse as they are. They could be seen as villainous, because I swear, they give the credits for both Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen. I think my theory, and my like, it might be just my headcanon, but my theory is that Danny Tanner actually had twin daughters, but he convinced them both that there was only one of them. He gaslit them into thinking that they were the same person, and only ever allowed one of them to be in the same room, and they were both called Michelle whenever anyone was around.
Wait, was this the reverse of Goodnight, Mommy?
I'm not aware.
It got so bad that eventually one of the twins had to pretend to be the Greek cousin.
Yeah. And I was entirely joking with that one. Although my favorite contrast in character versus actual person is like, I've been obsessed with Bob Saget for a long while for this, is he's Danny Tanner. He's the most clean cut, wonderful human being on the planet. He's purity incarnate, despite the fact that he shackled his entire family to one location with guilt and forced his best friends to live with him because of guilt.
It's okay. And you'll live in the basement.
Yeah.
And my other friend will sleep on the couch in the living room.
Yep. He basically took his friends and he emotionally hijacked them. So the real thing is Danny Tanner emotionally hijacks everyone around him into doing what he wants, into holding back their dreams, their goals, and everything.
And even when they start to achieve them, it's like, hey, Danny, my recording career is starting to take off. I think I'm going to move out. No, we'll build a recording studio in the corner of the basement.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've met this real hot girl. I think we're going to move in together. No, she can move into the basement too. Look, we're married and she's pregnant. No, that's fine. We got room.
He was a creepy cult leader. But then you see Bob Saget himself. My favorite thing he ever tells is when he first went on his comedy tour again after being on Full House, and he is one of the bluest comedians that was around at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even talk about what his opening joke was supposed to be when he stepped on stage in Minnesota that first summer after Full House was a phenomenon. But he walked out ready to tell an absolutely filthy joke, and it was just a sea of families out there, with their kids. And he opened with the same filthy joke he was going to, and he's no longer allowed to perform in Minnesota anymore.
So,
which is, by the way, a distinction I love, because there's a few of my favorite comedians from that era are all banned from performing in Minnesota for similar reasons.
So. Yeah. Listen, he is the male version of a certain female Stephen King character who broke a writer's legs because she was his fan. That's what he's doing to everyone.
We're not even talking about the anxiety that he's pushing on those kids.
Oh my God.
Jen, you have remained oddly silent this entire time. Normally we just can't shut you up. It's like putting seven $7 worth of quarters into a jukebox and hitting shuffle. But what are you thinking? Who's a problematic hero that you've got?
So somebody had actually mentioned before Peter Pan. Peter Pan is quite legit. So he kidnapped kids.
Yep.
Totally kidnapped Wendy. She had Stockholm syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, you're supposed to love Peter Pan, but
he's not providing for the kids that he's already kidnapped. Those lost boys don't have proper shelter, don't have proper housing or regular food. They're reliant on,
and they can't grow up.
No,
because he won't let them.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. I mean, we talk about how pervasive this myth is, and I don't know, is it too early to talk about Michael Jackson and naming his house Neverland?
As Spence says, Peter Pan is a narcissist, and mm-hmm. and it is all about him.
What?
Those children are there to make him feel good.
Since we're talking about Peter Pan,
yeah,
and so I'm sitting. We're gonna do this. You're gonna do this? I want to do this.
I don't know. Well, where
obviously,
you're going.
We're gonna have to, because you won't shut up about it.
So we're talking about Peter Pan, and of course, Peter Pan was depicted by the late great Robin Williams
in Hook.
Yeah,
but there was a movie where he was a domestic family terrorist called Mrs. Doubtfire.
Oh yeah,
that.
Yeah,
I didn't like that movie when it came out. The acting performance from Robin Williams is fantastic. Yeah. That's not, but the trope of the panicky ex-wife, and how somehow Robin Williams has got to save his kids from her, and just that one note character,
yeah,
has always really, really bothered me in movies when they play divorced parents against each other. And this is coming from a guy whose parents aren't divorced, but I really, really, really hate that trope in movies when they play them against each other in front of the kids.
Yeah.
To make the strife. Yeah. And then the idea that he's going to lie to everyone, go into a disguise, kidnap his kids, and do all these, oh, just because I love him. No, you go to jail for that.
And he's removing consent from his children, from his ex-wife, from everyone. It's 100% transphobic. We all know that now. It is not good.
And also, they play on the trope of the terrible stepdad. Pierce Brosnan is not a bad stepdad. He's James Bond, for crying out loud. He's gorgeous.
You're telling me I have to pick between Peter Pan and Remington Steele. Huh.
That's not a hard choice. Especially with the hair on those forearms.
I mean, sorry, I'm distracted by Remington Steele.
I'm sorry, my mind was elsewhere.
By the way, no one ever pretended that Remington Steele was a good guy. Just saying.
I feel a little called out now here.
Yeah, seriously.
Saunders Fox, listen. You will never compare to Robin Williams' forearm.
Yeah, no. Sorry, dude.
I thought for a while he was my real dad because of the
So there's another caretaker I would like to talk about, and Dumbledore.
Ooh.
Well, now, are we talking, book Dumbledore or movie Dumbledore?
Dumbledore, Movie Dumbledore obviously is done wrong, but book Dumbledore is still trash because instead of protecting children, he knowingly continues to put them in danger to deal with a problem that he could have handled many times over and can continue to handle, but refuses to because, and we don't find this out until after the books are done and it's never actually written in the canon. He had his heart broken by his old boyfriend. No, screw you. Just no. Dumbledore is trash.
Even though we know McGonagall was down. Like McGonagall was there. McGonagall was ready.
No, she facilitated it.
I feel like she did it because she wanted Dumbledore, and Dumbledore was not there.
No, I feel like McGonagall had complete trust in Dumbledore like everyone else did. You know, let's not forget that we are first introduced to Dumbledore as having saved us all from the evil wizard Grindelwald. And we find out in another series that they were boyfriends, and it is 100% untrue that he never did those things that they claimed he did.
Sadly, I looked it up on Google. I typed in, was McGonagall DTF with Dumbledore? And I'm not finding any hits on the first page.
Did you go to AO3? Or
did you go to the live journal?
Fanfiction.net. We know it's there.
I mean, you gotta word it a little more suitable to the world itself. It's down to clown.
But it's just...
It's creepily whimsical.
It's so... frustrating because you are introduced that he's supposed to be there protecting them and he withholds so much information. Like, for instance, let's make Harry live through abuse but not actually tell him, look, the reason why I keep sending you back to that abusive family is because there's a special spell there that protects you while you're there. How about I'm going to tell you that and I'm going to talk to your horrible aunt and uncle who keep abusing you.
Well, the whole
and point, stop that.
The whole point, from what I understand, having never consumed any of this media for a multitude of reasons, is that Dumbledore was using Harry as a pawn the whole time.
Yes.
Yes.
He had a plan to put in motion. He needed Harry to do it, F the consequences, and then just went and did it.
He could have handled Voldemort without anything before the series even began. He could have handled this, and Harry's parents would be alive, and Neville's parents wouldn't be in St. Mungo's. That, I have never gotten over that.
Well, Harry himself is pretty problematic as well.
Yeah.
For, you know, as I go ahead and, you know, read a little bit into this and, you know, yet again, having not consumed any of this media, he takes credit for a heck of a lot of things that Hermione does.
Yes, this is true. Hermione is a real hero.
That triad takes a lot of credit for things that my man Neville was involved in. Like,
this is also
let's be
Neville
real. Movie. Like, Neville's the actual hero of this story. He was the boy who lived also.
Mm-hmm.
Like, also, like, let's be real. Like, he got swole as heck. Like, everybody likes Neville now. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
but regardless
that's why long bottoming is now a thing, right?
Regardless of the physicality of the actor, Neville is always cool. Neville has an amazing arc. There are some of the stories about Neville are so fantastic because he is so cautious and scared about so many things because of his background. And when you see that somebody just gives him an ounce of attention, how he flourishes and just, you know, figures things out because he's a whiz at herbology, you know, it can pull the sword of Gryffindor out of the sorting hat. I mean, the dude is amazing, and he's got a true heart, and he doesn't care who he's going to the stupid dance with, you know?
It should have been a little love good, but anyway. He also, like, all he did, none of the things he ever did were for himself. It was always his fault. Like, he always was trying to warn them, trying to stop them doing the dumbest of things. He even was cursed or hexed.
Yep. And the fact that they gave him that curse after what happened to his parents.
This entire universe is trash and treats people horribly. I mean, I remember watching a snippet of one of the movies where the main plot that was going on in the movie at this point was there was a girl that everyone was mean to. They were so mean to her, she died. And her ghost now haunts this place because she's mad that they were mean to her. So their solution to the problem is to keep being mean to her.
Yeah.
They don't actually do anything.
Nope.
can we talk about the fact that Dumbledore let Hagrid take the blame for something he knew was not the thing that Hagrid did? Like,
yeah.
Hagrid was his fall guy.
Yeah, and Hagrid totally took the fall.
It is absolutely. It's an entire world that, you know, the internal logic of it is horrible when you really dig and dig and dig. It's one of those things where I have consumed. I've read every one of the books because I read the first one to see what it was about, and then just couldn't put I couldn't leave the series unfinished. That's a sickness of mine. I can't walk away from a thing. But
I still like the books. I'm calling it out because I like it.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of really hollow lessons in them. There's mm-hmm. a lot of really hollow. Oh, if you do this, you're a better person, ignoring all the awful around, right? Yeah. That's in there. And I think that captures the whole essence of what we're talking about right now, is a lot of things that were like on the surface, it's made to be, this is what a big shiny hero should be. Mm-hmm. But then forget all the stuff going on in the background, all the supporting characters, keeping people going, all of the people that are actually like Frodo wasn't the hero of Lord of the Rings. Sam was.
Yeah.
If Sam wasn't there, Frodo would have given up, right? Like given up the second he saw a mountain and went, "Well, I'm done."
I mean, listen, the line that symbolizes that is, "If I can't carry the ring, Mr. Frodo, then I'll just carry you."
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a little more obvious there.
Sniffle, sniffle.
But it's
everybody loves Sam.
Oh, Rudy.
Yeah.
By the way, he's also a great character in Stranger Things. He's an
I love his character in Stranger Things. I mean, I love Sean Astin.
Sean Astin's one of those people that was a child actor that turned out all right.
Yeah, and when you consider that he's the son of Gomez Adams, so that's actually Pugsley playing Samwise. Because John Astin was Gomez in the John Astin was Gomez Adams in the original Adams Family TV show,
and the driving force of that TV show even happening.
Oh really? Oh wow!
Yeah, cool. There's a whole great history there.
I've got one, an OG, OG, OG of OGs to talk about.
Yeah. So
a lot of OG and going
surprise about Sean Astin's dad. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, John Astin and Donna Reed made us Sean Astin and his brothers.
And isn't there pictures of him kind of looking like dressed like Gomez, like or something like that? Like
somewhere. Yeah, absolutely. So, I interrupted, but go ahead.
The OG of OG of OGs are problematic heroes. Mm. And I know that Nutty studied a lot of mythology in school.
Oh, all of them.
I got to bring up my man Zeus.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, no, he's garbage.
Is he the hero?
No.
Is this the hero?
He's the god of gods, the man of men. He is everything.
Even Hercules is trash. He kills his nephew. I mean, yes, come on.
Hercules kills his nephew, and like Zeus is like, man, that's a sexy cow. I'ma rape that cow.
I mean,
you've made kids with that cow. I'ma rape them kids.
Yeah, he just goes on with
I'm fairly certain
his sister.
The golden rain.
I'm fairly certain though that in Greek culture, they were meant to be object lessons, those the gods of what not to be a lot of the time. They weren't just like, yo, go around and seduce everything that walks. Be like Zeus. Chat,
in what world was Zeus ever considered a hero? Yeah.
It's not like it's not like they went, hey, be like the gods. Go and shag everything in sight.
Cautionary tales. Like the gods are jealous, and be good or they'll do something bad to you.
Yeah,
even if you did nothing other than happen to be attractive.
So especially if you did nothing other than be attractive. I mean, you know, you could be, you know, just some guy working at your forge with a club foot, just minding your own business, and then some super hot girl just walks up to you and like everything's fine. But...
Oh, you mean your sister walks up to you?
Right. Yeah.
Do we pivot to Game of Thrones all of a sudden?
Well, this is Greek mythology, so there you go. I mean, yeah. So no, I'm gonna go more into some OGs and Hamlet. Hamlet is not the hero, and it is his fault Ophelia is dead. That poor girl.
Well, I mean, if you really want to go OG, like, I'm looking at you, Romeo, and I'm looking at you, Juliet.
I'm,
My well, man, no, no.
Romeo has all to blame here. Well, he was hung up on Rosalind 2 seconds ago, and then he's like, hey, check out this 12-year-old.
I mean, Mercutio was right there.
Romeo and Juliet was a 7-minute relationship between teenagers that is acted out like it's this great tragic romance. It's the same thing that teenagers do every time they see each other and hormones flare up. Oh, I'm in love. This is my greatest love ever. I'm going to kill myself if I'm not with them. It's just that played out in flowery language.
Listen, Mercutio was right there. That was Romeo's one true love. And he died making fun of himself on the steps of that building. One of the greatest monologues.
There was a I remember seeing snippets of a conversation somewhere, and it highlights every problem with Romeo and Juliet. It's a young teenage girl talking to her mom. It's like, but mom, I'm in love. It's like, you're 14. You're not in love. Oh, but Juliet was 14 and she was in love and that was okay. It's like, yes, she was 14. She was in love. It lasted 3 days and 5 people died.
That's how good love goes, though.
Exactly. But yeah, we're talking about the love story between a 14-year-old and a 12-year-old. And I was thinking about this before. If you look at a lot of fairy tales and a lot of those original Disney movies based on fairy tales or anything, if you just add the character's age into it, they get, it's like all of the princesses are like 16 to 14. All of the princes are in their 30s.
Yeah, yeah. And like, on the one hand, you're like, well, I mean, they had shorter lifespans, so things happened earlier. No, wait. The princes were how old? Exactly. Yeah. So, I like Poltergeist's theory. Maybe that's why there's a real focus on Romeo and Juliet in high school. Kids, breakups happen. Do not kill yourself.
That's a really good point.
Look, it's just infatuation until someone murders someone for you, and then it's love.
Listen, one of my... This is...
We're star-crossed lovers. No, you're not. Shut up.
Wait, is that what that L7 song was about? Was it about Romeo and Juliet? When we pretend that we're dead.
Oh, God. So, for me, one of these OGs, right? Like, I love musicals. Like, as a kid, I didn't really like them, even though there's some of my favorite movies were musicals. I'm looking at you, Seymour, from Little Shop of Horror. You straight up murdered people, dog.
Yeah, he's not a good guy. You, but he is also
Seymour, the plant?
Nice guy. No.
That's Audrey, too.
That's Audrey. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. Seymour fed things to Audrey, too. And by things, I mean Steve Martin.
So this is the Rick Moranis character.
Yes.
Okay.
And he is also the nice guy trope, because why doesn't Audrey love me? Did you ever ask her out?
Dog, she wore that corset just for you, Holmes.
Did you ever mention that you are interested to her?
Yeah, that's no. a lot of these are. It's almost as if, you know, that the whole incel thing were just a manifestation of what's long been simmering in 80s media or in media since the 80s and beyond. Because, I mean, you get that whole, if we're going to talk about problematic heroes, I just have to, I have 4 words. Revenge of the Nerds.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, that's all gross.
No, that's, it's you're like, it's.
Head, you're in my head. I was just about to go there, man.
Yeah, I think there's very few characters in that entire franchise that could actually be seen as anything close to heroic. And even then, they were cool with all the awful things that the other characters did.
Yeah.
I think Ogre is the only character in that entire franchise that has any redeeming qualities, because he starts off as a jerk. He's one of those jocks that's going to pummel them. And then he goes, wait, nerds aren't so bad. And he evolves as a character.
Booker's not bad, but you're right. He condones all the actions that they take. Like, Booker is the only one who doesn't fall into certain type of tropes, where he makes fun of certain people. Like, Booger is probably the most accepting of the crew, but he's still terrible.
Yeah, but then he goes on and he makes all the angels fall and he steals Castiel's grace. It's just garbage.
Yeah. And it was a problem with a lot of 80s movies, where you got your Animal Houses, you got your Porkies, you got all these things where it was, you know, it's cool to be a sexual predator. Oh, is essentially what those movies were all about. And, you know, if you're disenfranchised and people have bullied you, it's okay to respond by being like a completely, utterly, and horribly irredeemable person to women.
But this is a thing that we're seeing all over media now.
Yeah.
Where, and you see this all over the place where, you know, you've done a bad thing. Yeah, but worse was done to me. Well, no, that's not okay. That still doesn't change the fact that you've done bad. Yeah, but you didn't prosecute those other people. It's not my responsibility to prosecute those other people. I'm looking at you.
Yeah, whataboutism is not the way to win your victory here.
You know, the proper thing to say in that case is, if I were in a position to and I had the power to at the time, I would have absolutely prosecuted those people. But you're the person who's committed a crime now. So I'm going to prosecute you.
Stop you.
Yeah.
This does not stop, clear you.
It's 3 a.m. You're driving alone down an empty city street and you come across a controlled four-way intersection. You can see all four lanes. There is no one coming in any direction. You have the entire block to yourself. Your light is red. Do you stop? Of course you do.
Yeah.
Because good people stop for red lights. And you wait for the green, and then you go. Even unwatched, you still stop for that red light.
Because you know that we've all made a decision and a contract, a societal contract.
So just because somebody ran a red light once does not give you carte blanche to run red lights because, well, my brother did it, and he got away with it, so now I'm going to do it, and I'm going to get away with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. Yeah. So I've got one that I really want to talk about. Rory from Gilmore Girls, and Tech reminded me of this, and I was like, this is 100%.
Man, before you start your rant, I'm just going to go very quickly and just talk about every time you watch this show, I walk in and just look at the TV and do the Baru face of just, what is wrong with these people? Okay, they're talking like really fast. Fine.
Like me.
And then it's just... It's like the show should just be called Questionable Life Choices from a Spoiled Rich Girl.
Yeah, yeah. Because it starts out where it's like you're supposed to think like Rory grew up and her and her mom, they struggled and all this other stuff. But really, like, she is 100% privileged and acts like she isn't. And she has no empathy for anyone outside of herself. She just feels like she... It deserves everything she's ever wanted without actually working towards anything. We are told that she's a great writer, but she's constantly not doing well at this. So how do we know that this is true? But most importantly, she is garbage to other people and she never improves. The first season, Rory is great because there's promise and she makes mistakes and she's learning. But then you realize this girl is not changing and she's getting more and more entitled without any work or reason. She's horrible to her best friend, Lane, who should be the main character of the show because she's amazing. It should be the Lane and Sookie show, really.
How many Supernatural references are we going to make? Because you're talking about Gilmore Girls and one of those underwear models is in that show, too.
This is true. And I have a whole fan fiction headcanon thing about that, about how Sam was living with a foster family and he went by the name Dean and fell in love with this girl and she broke his heart.
So it was Dean and Dean?
Yeah, there's Dean. When I first started watching Supernatural and I was telling my sister about it, I'm like, so there's Dean and not Dean. Not Dean used to be Dean in Gilmore Girls.
This is again, guys, you can find this on Nutty's live journal.
Possibly. It's still out there somewhere. but I mean, Rory is just, she's garbage. She's absolute garbage. And when I first watched Gilmore Girls, I was like thinking that, I kind of identify with Rory. And then I watched it again and many years later and I'm like, no, I'm identifying with Lorelai. At this point, I'm identifying with Emily. And these girls are just, Lorelai's not so great either, no matter how good she looks in jeans.
I mean, we're
the best pair of jeans ever put on TV until Jessica Jones. That is the best pair of jeans ever put on TV. Now, Jen, do you have anything else to bring up?
No.
Chatterbox.
Yeah.
You can't shut her up.
I mean, we could bring up her favorite person of all time.
Oh, no.
No, that's not. That's an anti-hero. That is, we discussed that we're not going into that type.
I mean,
this was discussed at the beginning of the podcast.
At the very very beginning. Did I have to say Hannibal does not count?
Yeah, no. We know he's a bad person.
Okay. So wait. I thought Hannibal was like the greatest hero of all time because he eats stupid people.
That says more about you, Jason.
Yeah.
So I have a type I'd like to bring up.
Sure.
There's a type of hero, and on the omnipotent Mary Sue type hero, who is the best. He's so good and so great at everything that he does.
Goku?
Kinda, because he blows up planets. Yeah, so yeah. Goku would fall into this as well. But the thing is, there's a type of hero who we're supposed to love, we're supposed to identify with them, they're supposed to be the hero, but they're so powerful that they go around just murdering thousands of innocent people, and nobody cares. And so three examples I got to bring up of this is Mario.
Yeah, Mario's awful.
Superman.
Yeah, especially yeah. Christopher Nolan's Superman.
And Godzilla.
Oh.
But all three of them will knock down a building, killing everyone inside it. Goombas are people, too.
Not a hero. Godzilla's not a hero.
Yeah. Also, sometimes.
Godzilla, okay.
I have an argument for Godzilla. Do you make sure that there are no ants under your feet when you walk to the car?
That okay, fair point. Yeah, and I don't care.
By that same notion, you're gonna dismiss Superman too.
I mean, does Rory make sure that everything he eats doesn't have a family?
No, he eats the family too.
Yeah, it's kind of a struggle.
Bringing up Superman Superman is Superman. I thought for a long while Superman was just bland, and that's why I didn't like him. I gravitated towards Batman, who's also problematic, very problematic. But I gravitated towards Batman because, as a character, Batman's more compelling. But then I realized lately, when the more I think about it, Superman is the epitome of he's the epitome of that colonial mindset of I have arrived in your territory. And I will impose the values I choose on you.
Right.
He comes to a planet that is not his own, and he goes, but I think this is justice, and if you don't like that, I'll hurf you into space.
But to be fair, the morals he's basically forcing upon people because he's a god amongst men were taught to him by those men.
Yes, he's an American colonizer. Through and through.
Yeah, but isn't it truth, justice in the American way?
Yeah, essentially.
Colonizing, yes.
And he never has to worry about consequence, because until such time as they absolutely needed to create a weakness in him, and yep. they brought up kryptonite, he would effortlessly fly into a scene. And Batman's bad because Batman is a rich white guy who takes his privilege and weaponizes it against criminals that have nothing.
Well,
Superman is worse because he walks in knowing he's never going to get hurt.
Yeah.
And then goes, oh, look at you, bank robber. I'm going to throw you through this vault door.
Yeah. Well, okay. And let's not forget the fact that he has no problem letting Lois, supposedly the love of his life, fall in love with him in disguise.
Yep.
So yeah, I have the Death of Superman comic.
Mm-hmm.
Doomsday did nothing but walk in a straight line and hit everything in the way until Superman showed up. And then the two of them destroyed half of Metropolis fighting each other. Doomsday could have happily walked in a direction and just kept on walking. But Superman was more than willing to take acceptable collateral damage in destroying half of a major city, toppling skyscrapers and everything, to kill one bad guy.
Yep.
Did the same with Zod. Does the same with everything. He's the epitome of overkill.
Oh, and let's not forget the fact that, like, Zod, it's like, I'm just going to throw you into the Phantom Zone forever. That's fine. That's a long-term solution.
Yeah,
and the Super Phantom Goblin Zones. Says he doesn't bother with long-term solutions, except, oh, I don't know, I'm going to send you in trapped forever. Like, that's not even... That's not a fair existence.
And that's a very much a Superman solution. It was an old Golden Age comic solution is we're going to take this problem and we're going to put it into a bottle and we're going to like throw that bottle on the shelf and never talk about it again.
Well, I mean, if you look at some of like, for instance, I think it was showing up in the Supergirl show. That's what their people did. They just kept throwing people in the Phantom Zone. And then all of a sudden, these Phantom Zone people just start popping out of the woodwork. Why? Because they're stuck in the Phantom Zone and fully aware of the time that is passing.
Mm-hmm. It's like the old Demolition Man cryo freeze. I remember everything.
if we're going to if we're going to talk about Superman, I mean, we can again reiterate, as we have said many times, that Batman would have done a lot more good by actually working on social programs and helping the people in need in Gotham rather than going around and beating up criminals and creating supervillains.
Yeah. I mean, had he spent his money making bat homeless shelters instead of billions of dollars in bat gadgets to beat up low-level drug dealers and bank robbers.
And you know you got a problem when you've got your own bat credit card, right? Like,
that's a low point.
So this reminds me of one of my favorite moments in Marvel comic is when Luke Cage and Daredevil get into an argument because there's a galactic threat happening and Daredevil shows up to Luke Cage's doorstep and is like, hey man, we need to go fight this thing. And Luke Cage is like, for what? Why? And Daredevil's like, no, we gotta go. And he's like, listen, how about you take a listen? Listen around you. Listen to this building, this apartment building. Do you hear anybody doing drugs, any abuse, anything like that? He's like, no. How about the block? How about the next block? How about this whole neighborhood? And he's like, no. And he goes, exactly. We're worried about space. We're worried about all this other stuff. How about we clean up our own backyard first? This is why Luke Cage is awesome.
I mean, and
when you think about why Batman would be better as the billionaire Bruce Wayne, and to be fair, why Superman is better as the Christopher Reeve Superman than actual comic Superman, right? Like, Christopher Reeve Superman was endearing. He didn't come off as someone trying to impose his values. He kind of came off as someone that you could love. Like, when you look at Superman, like, it's one of the reasons why, like, me and my boy Face, we talk about this all the time because he loves Superman. The reason why Superman is such an icon of morality, because he says he's an alien. He has a higher compass. He has a higher moral compass that was, don't get me wrong, it was given to him by humans,
But at the end of the day, when push comes to shove, all of that morality, we are gum under his shoe. Yeah. When he starts destroying swaths of the planet.
Yeah.
And we are collateral damage to him.
Speaking of colonizers and damaging planets, I've got another invading alien I'd like to talk about. How many of us have read Starship Troopers?
No, red. Oh, yeah, red.
Yes. Red?
I'm not red.
How many of us have watched Starship Troopers?
I watched it. I understand.
Okay. Freaking love that movie.
The main characters, they're like the good guys, right? We're supposed to think they're the good guys, but they're the invading aliens.
Yeah, but Hyland wrote that whole thing as a satire of that mentality. Like it was meant to be. They were meant to be like lampshaded, or not lampshaded, but they're meant to be. Yeah, these are good. Hoorah! They're amazing people. But we're supposed to, as a reader and as a viewer, see that they're not so good. Which I guess epitomizes this whole thing. It's what he would have liked us to do with all heroes, is examine them a little closer.
Yeah, Hyland wrote that as a treatise on what soldiers of the future were going to be. A lot of it was based on his experience as a soldier during the Second World War. Mm. And, you know, really that American imperial spirit, I think, sort of informed a lot of what the Earth government was like in Starship Troopers. And I think he was making a bigger point there, but he was really, you know, the movie sort of, you know, played it up when you get Neil Patrick Harris in an SS uniform as an intelligence officer.
I will agree with Paul in the chat there. It's Hyland was very questionable with a lot of things, like a lot of his own politics and his stances, but it was definitely meant to highlight what he saw as a problem.
You know,
but I mean, if we take that and we look at that and we go, okay, so these are people that are played up as heroes. They're supposed to be the big shiny heroes, the big go out and kick butt for their planet. We look at other heroes through that same lens of, well, nobody's completely clean, and it allows us to find a lot of these people. And I think if once we made that realization and we keyed in on Starship Troopers, you know, it makes it easier to see other people for the questionable heroes they always were, right?
So we brought him up on our Problematic Creators episode. Orson Scott Card, another person who is considered to be a hero who does terrible things and has a terrible philosophy, is Ender from Ender's Game. Like, don't get me wrong. In the moment, we agree with him, right? Where he's like, I beat the brains out of this dude so I would stop all of his buddies and him and later coming back to fight me.
I mean, yeah, you kind of paralyzed that dude, but whatever. You also caused a genocide because you stopped all of the future fights because you wiped out an entire species. Like, and he's a hero for that. And at the time, we're kind of like, all right. But then you get the bag story and you realize. And it's, I think, with those type of heroes and with those type of characters, it's a lot of this in the moment stuff that makes them the hero without full context.
And I mean, you thank you for reminding me with Ender's with Ender's Game. You remind me of one that's more recent and became more obvious and is going to get an instant reaction here. Wade Watts of Ready Player One. Wade Watts is trash. The epitome of the the epitome of a privileged, well, not privileged in the sense that he's socioeconomically privileged, but privileged for some in a lot of ways, character that grows up thinking they're entitled to the world, they're entitled to everything, they're going to be the big shiny hero, and who a lot of this media that we've talked about today informed his decisions, informed his worldview of, oh, a hero's got to be this person, this person.
Have you read the book too?
I've read the book obsessively.
Okay, so yeah. So I know there's massive differences between the book. I've never seen either, but the book and the movie are very, very different, especially in the ending. But is the character portrayed any different between the two?
The character's more likable in the movie.
Okay.
And to me, if I look at it on surface,
which is funny because I hear people. A lot of people say that the book is better.
Well, and that's nostalgia speaking there.
Okay.
So the character in the movie, if you watch the movie, is embracing a sense of a spirit of adventure, a sense of justice, a sense of fighting that on the surface of fighting against evil that on the surface of the book is the character of Wade Watts. He's the hero that steps up to face a faceless corporate evil, but he's also transphobic, misogynistic. He's informed very much by that Saved by the Bell type of Zach Morris type of I'm going to do anything to get the girl mentality. So he is the epitome of what we're talking about in this episode. He was informed by all these heroes, by all these so-called heroes that are bad people. He's the, I'm the Ross Geller. He's a bit of Ross Geller. He's a bit of every 80s action hero that shot first and asked questions later because it was cool. You know, he's all of those things incarnate, but not intentionally. And I don't think Ernest Cline meant him to be that way. I think he meant him to be the big shiny hero. But if you pay attention, oh no, he is
and
not.
I think sometimes that says a lot more about the writer. Like for instance, the whole Ender's Game thing. Like now that we've learned about the writer, or J.K. Rowling, now that we understand a little more about the writer. Like sometimes, the writer or the creator of the character has this idea that no, they are the epitome of what a hero is. And there are flaws because that writer does not realize that is a flaw.
So,
I want to wrap this up if we can and just do a quick lightning round. So my last lightning round, and it's going back to the characters that you expect to be the heroes. Dib from Invader Zim. He is garbage, and his sister just wants to play her game, and he can't leave her alone. And he is so obsessed with his neighbor that he is making everyone's lives miserable. And Zim wouldn't get even close to any actual bad stuff if Dib wasn't egging him on.
In the lightning round, I got to mention Ferris Bueller. And I have a quote here from someone. When you're a kid/teenager, you think he's a hero, a cool rebel who knows how to have fun. Then you become an adult and realize Ferris is the definition of peaked in high school. He always plays the victim card.
And he's Cameron's bully. He is a bad influence to Cameron. Cameron needs help. Cameron needs a sympathetic ear. But his friend who's like, oh, he's trying to kill himself. He's getting close to killing himself. I'll just take him on an adventure and have him watch me make out with my girlfriend. No, you're awful. You are trash.
So I'm going to bring up a small lightning round one that is not at all because I'm absolutely and completely binge watching this show right now. But Leslie Knope from Parks and Recreation. She is supposed to be this embodiment of female empowerment and everything like that. But she's willfully ignorant of everything, of everything around her. If it doesn't suit her worldview, she doesn't care about it. She demonizes an entire town because they're more well off than her town. She bullies people into doing what she wants. She constantly emotionally manipulates the people around her, all to get whatever her goal is. And the second she's confronted with a different worldview, she gets angry and pouty and just collapses. And yes, it may be played up for comedic effect, but she's trash.
When does that show get good? Because everybody's telling me it gets good, but I don't know when.
I personally, elements of it always were a bit good. I think it's when they start embracing Chris Pratt's character as being just full on goofball that it starts getting good.
Because I watched the whole first season and I'm like, why? And then I tried some of the second season and I'm like, I don't care. There's so many good things on TV.
Yeah.
Or streaming.
And again, that might be a lot of the characters in that are intentionally awful people. But yeah, in a world full of awful people, she manipulates all of them into doing exactly what she wants. And they're everybody is constantly dismissive of poor Gary, who just went by the name Jerry because his boss got his name wrong one day. Spoilers.
Spence in the chat says Glinda is evil. Do you mean Glinda the Good Witch? Because I mean, yeah. If you read Wicked, oh man.
but Wicked was an intentional subversion of.
Oh, I
of
know,
the characters.
And I love it so much.
And that may be, but Idina Menzel is like musical royalty,
and she's amazing. But the book is amazing. If you haven't read the book, check out the book. Also, The Ugly Stepsister and the other ones that he's written are so much fun. Anyone else have a lightning round?
I mentioned this in our chat, but I'll mention it here. Abed from Community is
Abed, yeah,
so, yeah, Abed is. Absolutely terrible. And to be fair, the rest of them are too.
Troy is a national treasure. Don't say Troy is evil. Troy's just dumb.
I'm sorry, I'm going to interrupt, but you know what? Also, you're right. In The Wizard of Oz, Glinda convinces a kid to go kill her former best friend, but also rewards her for killing another friend, just so that Glinda could be the only witch there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But the casting community are intentionally... trash people, I think.
I've got some more for lightning rounding.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Gina Linetti from Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Manipulative, controlling, really annoying.
I don't think she's supposed to be a hero, though.
Doesn't do her job properly. Oh, no, she's one of the main characters. And according to people that we know, the only
she's
reason
hilarious.
To watch
yeah.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine because Chelsea Peretti's hilarious. No, she's not, and that character sucks.
Gina's just the embodiment of everything that sucks about Chelsea Peretti, though.
But apparently Chelsea's like the nicest person on earth and was like the ray of light in working on that show.
Gina really well. Yeah. I just hate the Gina title.
Guys, remember, we set the rule that the best villains and the best characters that we hate are played by the nicest people on the planet.
Right. Okay.
Biff Tannen.
This is why I can't play heroes.
Yeah. You're just not that likable. Next, JD from Scrubs.
Yeah.
Katniss from Hunger Games.
Yes! Does not have any empathy for anyone outside of her family and really doesn't care about her family either.
Hey, Gail, I'm going to leave you my family, even though I know you got 7 brothers and sisters and an ailing mother. Bye, fam. I'm going to go be famous with pita bread over here.
Pita bread. Edward Cullen from Twilight.
Well, yeah.
Well,
Jacob from Twilight. Yeah.
Twilight.
Yeah.
Twilight. Full stop.
Vox, you had a point here about someone who starts out as supposed to be a hero, but then turns into something terrible. Rambo. In the first Rambo, he's sympathetic.
Yeah.
He's sympathetic. He's to be fair.
He shot him at first. It was self-defense.
Like, to be fair.
He drew first blood.
To be fair, he's a victim. And he's a traumatized veteran who literally was just going to see a friend. Like, he was walking to see a friend. And these backwoods sheriffs. But by then, later, he becomes a supporter of the Taliban. And it's he kills a bunch of people.
Yeah, but we're fighting Russians, okay? We're fighting the Russians. Kill a commie for mommy.
It is actually...
This is not a statement that is actually endorsed by the United Vice Podcast.
I think Rambo falls into the line of, like, the Punisher, where... That is not supposed to be a hero, but people hold him up to be a hero.
I mean, 80s action movie. Oh, I got one for you. John Wick. John Wick is not a hero. John Wick. I mean, they killed his dog. That's
sashimi.
Oops, sorry. That's
The censor himself.
Okay. Taco. That is incredibly taco. That they killed his dog. But to go on a full-on rampage, not only against not only against the family that did it, but anybody that stood in his way.
Yeah.
How many hundreds of people did he kill?
To recklessly endanger the lives of a bunch of clubgoers while you're murdering people in a club.
And don't forget the subway shootout with Common.
I will give you, there's no overkill when you're trying to kill Alfie Allen.
But then
not only that, but he goes against his own organization. He goes against everything that he ever believed in, which was already questionable in the first place.
Although
John Wick is no hero.
Although, to be fair, he is betrayed by Odin.
True.
He is betrayed
by Swearingen himself. So I'm going to wrap this up unless anybody has any others.
Carrie Bradshaw, Sex and the City.
Oh, absolutely. Oh,
Spider-Man.
Daniel LaRusso from The Karate Kid. Yes, from the original movie. And if you find our podcast and you go listen to the episode where we did a reviewing The Karate Kid TV show, we talk a heck of a lot. We go on and on about how Danny is not the hero that he appears to be. And this is coming from a bullied kid.
Yeah,
I think this is that episode might have been a little bit of what planted the seed for this episode, right? So,
yeah,
Danny was always the instigator. But again, it's like a lot of genres around that time, the bullied kids going and doing awful things to the people around them in order to get back at them didn't make them heroes.
Yeah, no. In that genre, they also made it to where, like, they had to make the villains so villainous, we had to root for the hero, right? Like, I mean, in Karate Kid, the coach is literally abusing his players to make them cripple a kid. Although Danny deserved it. And
he did win that tournament with an illegal head kick. They did have a right
to... That is true.
So I'm going to close this out with the man that everybody thinks, you know, yeah, there's no heroes in Game of Thrones, except maybe Ned Stark. No, Ned Stark is garbage, and he is completely fine with, what's the word when you kill an entire family? It's patricide if it's your own family.
No, patricide if it's your father.
Yeah, well, yeah. And then there's one if you kill everybody within your family.
I don't know.
But anyway, he is totally fine with wiping out an entire genetic line because one person has mental illness. One person in the family has mental illness. How about, hey, Rhaegar, your dad's going pretty bonkers. Why don't you take over? It's time for Rhaegar to take over here. No. That's not happening because Mr. Nice Guy, Robert Baratheon, doesn't like the fact that his girlfriend, who's not even his girlfriend, has the hots for Rhaegar. No. Oh, or how about the fact that, hey, guess what? There's this, we've stolen the throne, but your kids aren't actually your kids, so we should care about that more than the actual lives of the people we're serving, because why?
Oh,
it'll ruin the legitimacy of the throne you stole. Everything could be avoided if Ned wasn't so dumb.
Let's also talk about our friends
genocide.
Let's talk about our friends the Greyjoys.
Ugh.
And did you pay the iron price? Yeah, it's only okay to wear jewelry if you frickin' murdered somebody to win.
That's just a hard work ethic.
Listen, guys.
I say this talking to a Greyjoy.
Listen, we all know the true villainy is the fact that they didn't do hour-long episodes just idolizing the food that he talked about in those books. We know the villain. The villain is HBO.
By the way, the term would be familiar side.
Familiar side. There you go.
Yeah.
It's still genocide, but yeah. So on that note, by the way, this comes from the woman who podcasted for 8 years about the show and has read every book multiple times. Yeah. Yeah.
Except the last one.
Oh. Yeah. And I don't think that's ever coming out. Let me tell you, I think HBO deal ruined that forever.
Who's watching the chat right now? How do I find it? There it is. Users in chat. So one of these people...
Don't out the lurkers.
No. One of them has to be George Martin, who is watching this. So T for Goblins, I think...
That is not George
Martin. I really think that's George R. R. Martin right there. Finish your book, George. I know it's you. I know you're hiding.
He's always...
Maybe it's, you know what? Maybe it's Paul. Maybe it's Paul flashing them big author bucks, giving everybody tier one subs. Just flashing cash instead of writing his book.
I've been George R. R. Martin this whole time.
Why, George? All right,
then you got a lot to explain for, because speaking of trash.
Maybe it's Jen. Maybe that's why she's been so quiet this whole time. She's just actually writing the book.
Yeah. Game of Thrones.
And then Joffrey comes back from the dead and marries Viserys, and they rule the kingdom. Are you happy now, Ted?
No. The way the books are going to end is because he's so epic in real life, Drogo is just going to come back from the dead and rule.
Like, no.
He's going to come back, throw his hair over him, go, "Hi, I'm Jason Momoa." And they're like, "No, you're Khal Drogo." No. I'm actually Jason Momoa. And no, they're like, "Oh, all right."
Well, they did that joke on The Simpsons where Lucy Lawless shows up. She's got the two kids under her arms and she's flying across the sky. And they're like, "Wait a minute, Xena can't fly." It's like, "I keep telling you, I'm not Xena. I'm Lucy Lawless." Oh, okay.
So we've got the last one, a superhero that was originally a terrible person, Booster Gold. There you go.
Oh, but Booster's so good now, though. He's amazing. And he should be played by Nathan Fillion, by the way.
And on that note, thank you so much, everybody, for joining us. Who are some heroes that you think are absolute trash? And it doesn't mean that you don't like the content. You can still like the content and still think the hero is trash. Let us know. You can listen to all of the socials and jump into the Discord, go to the Facebook group, whatever, and let us know, who do you think is trash? I want to thank everyone for joining us. I want to thank our good friends over at the Nerds with Voices. Where can people find you?
Oh, they can find everything you do at nerdswithvoices.com. And you can also find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/jtrooper501, where I like playing a game where I get killed by other players all the time. It's fine.
And we want to thank Vox for joining us and coming back to our podcast after the long absence, not since the last podcast, but just remembering that he started out as our regular co-host and now he's back. And I love that you're back, man. So thanks so much.
Well, thank you very much. And yeah, you can find me on all the socials of Sonorous Vox. Go ahead. Don't bother following me on Twitter. There will never be any more content than there is right now. Don't follow it at all.
It's gold.
Just definitely don't follow. It's garbage. Speaking of trash, hashtag hash brown.
Hashtag hash brown. So thank you so much, everybody. We will catch you around on the flip side. Bye.
Bye.
Before we go, we want to thank all of our patrons, without whom we wouldn't have 2 episodes a month. So thank you so much to everyone. We want to thank our top tier big daddy. Thank you, Jack, so much for all of your help and support. Thank you to our other big daddies, Jason and Rich the TT. We want to thank our patron of the arts, Mark Cabot, Andy Luke, Melissa Bartell, the Bathtub Mermaid, and Susanna, along with Mark the Encaffeinated One. And you can also check him out at encaffeinated.ca. We want to thank our number one fan, Shane. We want to thank Hugh, Uncle Monster, Will, Zach Mann, Greg Larson, the Radical Geek, Steve Pritchard, Susan, Lynette, Harold, Ian, Patrick, Ken Kennedy of Kenzoid's Autonomous Zone, Kinsey, Mike of the Redacted Files, and Justine. Thank you so much for all of your support. We really appreciate it. All right, hang on. Nutty's going to edit this because I know that I said I wasn't going to pay attention to the things in chat while recording, but Poltergeisty just gifted 5 subs to the community. And that is awesome. Thank you so much for that, dude. Wow.
Dang, Paul. Thanks, man.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Hey, you got one. Tech, you got a sub.
I got a sub. Woohoo.
That means you can use the Rory emote outside
of... Right. I am going to go spam the emotes in the other channels I watch. Hey, look at that. Aurora Lee's been lurking the whole time.
Yeah, well, maybe. Banks, you got one too. That is awesome. Thank you so much. Tech, was there something that you wanted to say? It looked like
I propose a challenge for a next episode.
Okay, hold that thought.
Yep.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, challenge for the next episode. We do the reverse of this. Villains that we were supposed to hate, yes, but we all fell in love with. But Here's the challenge. We cannot talk about anyone on any show in the Defenders arc. Because we'll just talk about Defenders the whole freaking time. And we've already talked about them.
How about if we have to prove that the villain is actually a good person?
Okay.
Okay. So they're actually doing well.
That's one of the people I was going to say.
By the way, I was going to say Tuxedo Mask.
Pedophile.
Yeah. Tuxedo Mask. Problematic. That's what. No, no.
18-year-old going around hitting on 14-year-olds.
Yep.
Oh, I missed the one from Tifa Goblin.
That's a good one. Cyclops is a perfect one.
Cyclops fits right into that basic trope that I was thinking of when I started this. Cyclops is exactly that. Yes, F Tuxedo Mask.
Nutty Bites is produced by Nimlas Studios under a Creative Commons Attribution No Commercial Non-Derivatives 3.0 International License. That means you can't change it without my permission. You can share it and send it to your friends. Just link back to me, my site, and everything. We live at nimlas.org, which has links to everything social media, including facebook.com/group/nuttybites and patreon.com/nukejoss, or call 347 Nutty 42.